The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
We've been exploring the topic of karma for the last month or so. And today, I'm hoping primarily to have the discussion come mostly from questions. But I thought there's probably, I want to just remind you of the key points on karma, just to begin, hoping to do that in about 15 minutes. And then I'll open it to questions. There were some great questions beginning at the ending of last session, so I wanted to allow more time for questions this time. So karma, that's a word that we're all familiar with. It's used so much in our everyday language. It's been a Pali word. Actually, that's a Sanskrit word. Kama is the Pali. Karma is the Sanskrit version of the word. And it's been adopted into our English language and often used to mean something like fate. You know, if something happens to you, somebody might say, well, that's your karma or something like that. It generally meaning something along the lines of it's kind of your fate, or it's predetermined or something like that, or it's kind of a fate, kind of a notion in our everyday language. In the Buddha's day, there were a number of ways that karma was understood, some of which were this kind of deterministic notion. The Buddha's understanding of karma is that it is a natural law, kind of like gravity is a natural law, that karma isn't something that the Buddha created or made up. It's more an uncovering of a natural principle that our behavior, that our life, the human side of our life, follows from. So there's the natural law is one of cause and effect, and there's a lot of different kinds of cause and effect in the universe. You know, there's cause and effect at the particle physics level. There's cause and effect at the level of like weather. There's cause and effect in terms of genetics. So there's a lot of different kinds of cause and effect. And the cause and effect of karma is a cause and effect principle related to our actions and their consequences. That our actions have consequences in the first place. That it's not simply that we act and avoid, but that our actions have consequences. And those consequences, the outcome, or essentially the effect of our actions, is related to the ethical impulse, or the ethical motivation of the action. So if we act out of greed or aversion, if we act out of self-interest, self-serving notions, or act out of resistance, hatred, if we act out of delusion or confusion, then that will rebound on us. It will come back to us as a struggle. If we act out of non-greed, non-aversion, non-delusion, if we act out of wisdom, of kindness, of compassion, of generosity, if we act from those motivations, that tends to lead to the effect or the consequences that our minds become freer, happier, more at ease, less struggle in our lives. Now, the the consequences of our actions, this is where karma begins to get I'm going to use the word confusing. I can't think of a better word at this moment. So these consequences are not necessarily immediate. They may happen immediately, but they may also happen way in the future. Way, way in the future. And in the Buddhist metaphysics, the consequences could also happen in a future life. And I'll come back to that point in a moment. So the, like for instance, just a simple example of how consequences can act in the future. You know, that the consequences of an unskillful action might rebound on us, not immediately, but much later. So for example, if you tell a lie to someone, maybe that lie is motivated by wanting to protect yourself, to prevent that person that you're lying to have a bad opinion about you. And so you lie about something or other. You know, maybe a small lie, not a huge lie, but, you know, a small lie. And in that moment of lying, there might actually be a little bit of relief, right? There might be a sense of, whew, got over that one, you know. That one's not a problem anymore. And so there might be a little bit of a sense of, whew, it's okay now. And let's say that 6 months later, the person finds out that you have lied to them. At that point, there may be some consequences, you know, that person would be hurt or confused or angry with you. Then perhaps, I mean, if this is a person that you have a relationship with, that dynamic will impact you. So that's just a small example of how karma, the results of our karma. So the word karma in the Buddhist understanding, the word karma actually refers to the actions. So the actions are our karma. The results are what's called kama vipaka, or the results of karma. So the results are, the consequences are simply called the results of karma. So those results can be felt now or in the future. And the results are also not deterministic in terms of what will happen to you. There were some teachings at the time of the Buddha that our actions had consequences and they were fixed consequences. So the example of the kind of sense of if you kill somebody, you will go to hell. You know, that kind of thing, that there's kind of fixed consequences to our actions, that if this happens, that will happen. And the Buddha's understanding of this natural law is a little more nuanced than that. That it's not fixed consequences. He said that if we do act out of greed, aversion, or delusion, it will rebound on our minds in some way as suffering, as dukkha, as unpleasant experience. The degree of that dukkha, of that unpleasantness, can vary widely. So, for example, the Buddha said in one discourse on karma, he said, for some people who do this unskillful action, it may be felt, this he said, a trifling unskillful action may be felt as very strong suffering. He said, he actually used the word that for a trifling small act, somebody may go to hell. And I've actually experienced this in the moment. I mean, we can think, The Buddhist cosmology does admit the notions of heavens and heaven realms and hell realms. And I also, for myself, I understand those as psychological in this life. At one point, I was feeling the consequences of having made a small lie, feeling the consequences of that. And for 3 days, I was on retreat, and for 3 days, it felt like I was in hell. I mean, just the torture chamber that the mind put itself through was quite dramatic. And so the Buddha said, you know, this small unskillful action could be experienced as a hell realm, or it might be experienced by another person. The same kind of small unskillful action might be experienced in the moment as barely a ripple through the mind, barely a ripple of unpleasantness. So there's a wide variety of how these consequences land on us, and there's two basic things that impact that. One is the kind of stream or force of skillfulness that or unskillfulness that we have lived in up to this point. So if we have largely behaved in a skillful way, then our the consequences of our actions are generally actually felt more presently than in the future. And they tend to be not quite so sticky for us. So if there's been a lot of that momentum of skillfulness, the consequences of small, unskillful actions, and we tend to, if we've lived a life of skillfulness, tend not to do too many large unskillful actions, again, cause and effect. So the stream of wholesomeness impacts the way those consequences are felt. So the Buddha uses an analogy here, another analogy of if you take a grain of salt, a crystal of salt, and put it into a large pond of clear water, and then take a glass of that water to drink, you're not going to taste much of that salt, because the salt is kind of diffused in the purity of the water. Now, if the mind has more cultivated unskillfulness, if there's been this stream of unskillfulness that's been cultivated up to this point, then a small unskillful action may rebound much more strongly on us. And the Buddha uses the example of putting that salt, same salt crystal, the same size salt crystal, in a small glass, and then how much that salt crystal impacts the flavor of that water. So that's one of the ways that the results of karma is, I guess I'll use the word mitigated, by how we have behaved in the past. And then also the results of karma can be changed, altered, by how we choose to step forward. If we choose to step forward into the next moment to encourage or incline the mind towards skillfulness as we go forward, that also can mitigate the results of karma. I gave the story, and I won't go through the whole story this time, but I gave the story last week about Angulimala, who was a mass murderer at the time of the Buddha. He had killed 999 people when he met the Buddha. And that meeting turned his mind. And he started meditating. He started refraining on those unwholesome impulses, cultivating wholesome impulses, and freed his mind, completely changed his mind. So the consequences of having killed 999 people, the story goes that when he went on alms rounds after he ordained as a monk, that people weren't very friendly to him. You know, they didn't like to offer him food. They knew he was who he was, you know, so they didn't like to offer him food, and instead they threw clods of dirt and sticks at him. So he'd come back from alms round with little cuts on his head and things like this, you know. And the Buddha basically said, you know, this is the consequences of your having killed 999 people. And he said, bear it, because, you know, if you had not turned your mind, the consequences would have been vastly worse. So that's also a way that karma can be shifted. It's not only how what that action is landing in the present moment, but how we choose to step forward into the next moment. Are we choosing to step forward with an intention of kindness, intention of generosity, intention of wisdom? Or are we choosing to step forward with self-serving interest, with confused motivation, with hostile or aversive motivation? Those unhelpful motivations tend to rebound on us as suffering. So karma basically describes our minds, how our minds work, this very simple principle of cause and effect. And so understanding this principle, we can essentially choose to, or begin to choose to reorient our minds, to choose to step forward out of compassion, kindness, generosity, wisdom, instead of our habitual motivation. That turning, that choice, that making that choice, it's a slow process. It is not immediate that when we see, for instance, oh, this will help me to become more free, to choose out of kindness, to act out of kindness, to act out of generosity, to act out of wisdom. Our minds have a lot of habits, a lot of momentum from our past, and often we are acting out of our habits rather than out of our conscious choices. And even when we consciously see, sometimes the momentums of those habits are strong enough that it's hard to choose differently. And yet, the beginning of this process begins with mindfulness, to recognize what's happening for us. To recognize what are our motivations. And that beginning to recognize starts this process of turning the mind towards skillful motivation. So this law of karma describes both how we get caught, how we tend to stay stuck in our patterns, and how we can choose to step forward and become happier, more free. The last piece of recap that I will do is on rebirth. Karma is, in the traditional Buddhist teachings, very tied up with, or it is taught along with, the teaching of rebirth. That, as I said a little while ago, that the consequences of our actions may, they call it ripening, the ripening of karma, and it's very like the growing of a seed, that the actions we have are like we're planting seeds. We're planting intentions, and those seeds may grow at some time in the future. The conditions for those seeds to grow. I mean, you can have a seed from a tree or a seed from a plant that just sits there for the longest time if it's in dry conditions. You know, you have these seeds in envelopes that sit on the store shelves for ages, right? So those seeds are sitting there. They have the potential to become something. It's not until the conditions are right that they will become something. And kind of similarly, our intentions are planted, our actions with these intentions are planted, and when the conditions are ripe, they arise. And so the teaching is that that these results may arise in the moment. We might feel the results in the moment. We might feel the results later in this life, or we might feel the results in a future life. And likewise, the intentions from our past lives might influence what's happening in this life. So the understanding is that this process of cause and effect doesn't essentially end at death, that there is a kind of a propulsion forward of the energy of intention. Now, in my own experience, I do not have any evidence whatsoever for this multiple lives. And my own mind seems to be structured in the way of, well, I don't have any evidence for this, so at this point I feel pretty agnostic. I do not know. Like, I can't know. I can't know whether there was a previous life. I can't know whether there will be a future life. So I try to hold this with maybe, okay, possibly, might be. So I don't feel, to me, it doesn't feel crucial to pick this up as a belief in order to benefit from the teachings of the Buddha. I see very clearly how this law of karma operates in this life. It's very clear. And that guides my actions in this life. The unfortunate thing is, if that is guiding my actions in this life, if there does happen to be a future life, that will be carried forward. So, you know, it's kind of, the Buddha actually talks about this. He talks about, it's kind of like a Pascal's wager. I don't know if any of you are familiar with Pascal's wager. But it's like the Buddha says, well, you know, if you act here skillfully here and now, and there is a future life, then the consequences will be helpful in that future life. If you act unskillfully here and now and there's a future life, then you'll pay for it in the future life. So he suggests that we act skillfully here and now, and that, he says, because the acting skillfully here and now is helpful here and now and also helpful in the future, he says, you will have made a lucky throw on both counts, like you're throwing dice, making a bet. So the teaching on karma is tied up with this teaching on rebirth. For myself, I find the teaching on karma to be incredibly valuable here and now, and so I can hold that aspect of karma, of rebirth, kind of lightly with a I don't know mind. See if there's anything more to say about that. I guess I will say this piece around how it's understood to act across lives, or give the analogies. Let's say I'll give the analogies for how it's understood to act across lives, because I don't understand the mechanism by which this works. I understand the analogies to some extent. So there's an analogy of, suppose you have a bunch of candles lined up, and you start with a candle that's lit on one end, and you take this candle and then you light the next candle and blow out the first candle. Now this second candle is now burning. There's a kind of a link between the two flames. But you can't say they're the same flame. You know, they're not the same flame. But there's a kind of an energetic flow or an energetic continuity between those flames. But the flame on the first candle was burning in dependence on the wick, on the wax of the first candle. And the flame on the second candle is burning in dependence on the wick, on the wax of the second candle. So they're not the same flame. There was an energetic transmission or an energetic connection between those two. And so likewise, the understanding is that karma is kind of like an energetic transmission between lives. That the it's not the same. It's not like there's the same person being reborn. So this ties up with the teaching on not self, actually. It's not like it's the same person, like there's an entity going from this life to the next life. It's more like that flame. It's not the same flame, but there's an energetic transmission between lives. So is that what goes to the next person, this energetic transmission? My understanding is that I think of it kind of, the other piece I was going to say about this is that that same string of candles actually also applies moment to moment in this life. That every single moment, actually, we are essentially reborn. It happens that we are reborn in the same body. It's kind of like what might happen if, you know those candles that you can't blow out? You know, so you've got that candle and you blow it out and it like almost goes out and then it comes back. Kind of like that, you know, that the energetic transmission kind of stays connected to this body. So the consequences, it's like in this moment there's a stepping forward into the next moment and there's a carrying of the kind of a habits through to the next moment. And that is propagated moment to moment in this life. And kind of similarly, that flow of energetic impulse, that flow of intention, so it's like that intention, the flow of intention, at death is said essentially to, it goes out in this body and then re-arises in another body, in the womb. It re-arises in another womb. And so that energetic transmission is rolling on. But it's not a thing. You know, it's kind of like that flame. The flame isn't really a thing. It's burning independence on something. But there is an energy there. This always is the piece that has the most questions.
And I'm thinking, should I even speak? Because it's just so untangible. But I have this thought. First off, I like your use of flame because Hanukkah is next week, and you light each candle with the one Shamus candle, and you light the newer day first, and then you go back to the previous nights or days. But it's a connection, and you're using one particular flame to light every single one. So I just started to think about that. But what I wanted to say is with karma, good karma, or the karma that we hope, like when you said we're reborn, or we could be, so this is the belief, that we take our, I mean, I don't know that because you are acting with good karma in this life, if you're that kind of person in the next life, do you start from scratch? Or does that accompany you to your next place? I understand it in the own realm of our life right now. Every single day you can have or every second you can have a different direction with your karma and you can change. But when you leave, what's it saying? It's just saying that you're going to go to become a person that's comfortable in the next life, at ease, or do you actually take some of that learned skill and wisdom with you into the next life?
That's not clear to me whether we actually take some of the learned skill and wisdom to the next life. To some extent, there is the understanding at certain levels of freedom that that wisdom is carried forward. Now, it may not be consciously remembered. You know, it may not be consciously remembered.
Right. I kind of know that there's no answer, and it's okay. Mm-hmm. It just kind of boggles my mind, and you know, it's just one of those things I think about.
It is boggling.
But this wasn't actually what I wanted to ask. And the thing I wanted to ask is, it may come out really strange, and we don't have to address it if it's in our lives right now. We spread our karma by acting with good intentions, and well, we don't all do that, and I don't do that all the time, certainly. But I recognize when I don't lately. You have influence on other people in your lives, whether they're your nieces, nephews, cousins, kids. And what do I want to ask? Spreading good karma, and then you leave the world, but your other people that you've affected and have you in their hearts and in their beliefs and in their actions, they're still here. Does it have anything to do with your karma other than it's good to act that way?
Well, in a way, to me, this touches on the teaching. What you're asking is touching on the teaching of merit, which is the understanding that our actions in the world are shared with other beings. And those actions, whether skillful or not, are shared with other beings. You know, that essentially we do impact other people. And if we are acting skillfully, like the karma of the Buddha, you know, the consequences of the Buddha are rippling to this day because he taught, because he acted, you know, that it's that set into motion, essentially, what I see, it's like a transference. It's not his karma anymore. It's being transmitted by the karma of others. So by my teachers in Burma, it's being transmitted by them to me. It's being transmitted by us to each other. So the wisdom of the Buddha, you know, when we hear it, it begins to land and impact our experience here and now. So it's not so much, I don't think of it so much at that point when it's out into the world that it's my karma anymore. It's more whether somebody picks it up and acts on it. And then it becomes their karma. So it's like, it's propagation, it's ripple effect.
So the movie Groundhog Day was a stealth teaching of Buddhism?
I don't know that he actually was Buddhist, but there's certainly, it definitely portrays that, the consequences, you know, how, mm-hmm. how the consequences unfold. I love that movie because it does show that so clearly. And in many ways, I think there was somebody who did an interview, a Buddhist person who did an interview with the director and said, did you have any idea this was going to be such a hit with the Buddhist world? And I think, I don't quite remember his answer, but I think, you know, it wasn't consciously a Buddhist teaching from him, but yeah. it's a teaching on karma.
Just another quick comment.
Is that on?
It says it's on.
Okay.
One other quick comment is that, as I understand it, the Hindu, teachings on karma that preceded Buddha talked about people, or described people who who live a life poorly in the current life might come back as an animal or an insect or something in their next life. And I find someone who did it very well might come back or not come back at all. You might end the cycle of birth and death and rebirth. I like that as a metaphor a lot, not because I concur with people coming, humans coming back as insects or vice versa, but because it suggests that this is fundamental to the way we live, or to the way humans live.
So the teaching on karma definitely is fundamental to the way we live. It's like integrated into our whole being. Now, what you said about the teaching on Hindus, you know, the Hindu teaching on karma, same teaching on Buddhism, that there are these different realms. There's the hell realms, there are animal realms, there's the human realm, and there's many heavenly realms, way more heavenly realms than hell realms. I think there's like 7 realms below the human birth and like 33 above or something like that. It's, I can't remember the numbers, but so there's all these different realms, and there is the teaching in the Buddhist texts about people who have been, engaged in unskillful actions, and then the Buddha is asked, you know, how were they reborn? And he might say, well, there was one story in particular I remember about a man whose wife did something unskillful, and because of that action, she was reborn in hell for 7 days, and then after that, she went to the heaven realms. So after her, you know, 7 days in hell, and what's a day? I don't know what a day is in hell, but... well, they also talk about eons in hell, so... so there was that she was reborn in hell for 7 days, and then after that karma of that action was exhausted, she was said, because she largely lived a very skillful life, that one action rebounded on her, on the mind stream of that being. It's not her, again, it's not an entity. Rebounded on that mind stream as 7 days of that mind stream in hell realms, and then following that in the heaven realms. And it is said that the Buddha, when her husband kept asking him, where was she reborn? Where was she reborn? He refused to answer him for 7 days because he didn't want to let the man know where she'd been reborn until she got to the heaven realms, because he knew that it would be 7 days. So there are stories in the time of the Buddha that he talks about people being reborn in heavenly realms, in hell realms. But again, one of the key distinctions is it's not an entity that is reborn. It's more of a process tumbling forward that is heading in a direction. And that direction may be headed towards suffering, or it may be headed towards joy, happiness, etc. Yeah. Yeah.
I'm interested in hearing you say a little more about unskillful actions in this life. And, you know, I heard from, I think, the last few weeks, an idea that, I get the concept of you not, these unskilled actions become a part of who you are, and doing more skilled actions, it sort of dilutes the effect of the unskilled. When you talk about unskilled actions, I can immediately think of 3 or 4, you know, I mean, they just pop into my head when we're talking about it, and I just wonder how much time one spends or should spend dealing with those unskilled actions that may be way past and are having reverberations. But I mean, there are therapies that have you doing forgiveness and various other actions. And I'm just wondering what you would say from a Buddhist point of view about, you know, addressing those unskilled actions.
So a couple of pieces here. There's several threads that popped into my mind as you spoke. The first piece that I'll put out there, because it feels like the most important, is that the most important place to work with our karma is in this moment. How are we stepping into the next moment? Are we stepping into the next moment with confusion, with self-serving interest, with resistance? Or are we stepping forward with an open heart? That choice is what allows change to happen. We either stay tied to our habits, or we begin to turn the tide towards more skillfulness. So this moment is really the only place we can make that change. So that's the first piece I want to say. And essentially, I feel like that is so central to my life. It's like, you know, if I take care of this moment, what I meet in the future, whatever I meet in the future, I'm more likely to meet with skillfulness. So it's like, that's the protection, is to step forward in this moment. Now, stepping forward in this moment may mean meeting some of the consequences of our past. So if, as you said, there's some ripple effects that are felt from those past unskillful actions, some of those ripple effects may be simply felt in the mind. You know, a memory arises and you feel the suffering again of that action. In this moment, do you react with hatred, aversion for yourself, or do you react with, or do you, you know, more open to, oh, it's like this. This is the consequences of having behaved in that way. It's like this. And then perhaps choosing to step forward with a kind of a resolve to not engage in that kind of action. Perhaps, depending on the situation, making amends, you know, going back. And sometimes we can't make amends. You know, sometimes it's not possible. So the main exploration is, how are you relating here and now? And as things come up here and now, that's where we really can meet them and, again, turn to shift. If you find, for instance, you know, people sometimes find that because of some unskillful actions in the past, it feels like it kind of keeps reverberating, like it rebounds on us a lot in our lives. That might be a time when we actually want to sit down and, you know, kind of perhaps in therapy or something like that, or in a meditation retreat, work with some of the feelings associated with that. You know, look at what's happened. Look at whether there's doing forgiveness for oneself, doing forgiveness for others, doing metta for oneself, doing compassion for oneself, compassion for others. So there may be a place for that in our working with the impacts of our unskillful actions.
Thank you.
Couple questions, but I'll do one at a time and maybe give someone.
Okay, thank you.
So you mentioned sometimes if a person has mostly skillful actions and then one little one, and you gave the example of yourself doing the little lie at the retreat. So my question is about, in a way, it seems that there's a contradiction about saying if somebody's mostly skillful, then an unskillful action will cause less difficulty for them than it would a person who's quite often unskillful.
So this is a great question.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. I know exactly what you're saying, and I thought I would leave this, or I thought I'd leave this to see, you know, if somebody picks up on it, and you did. So essentially, so this is a kind of, this gets more into the workings of the mind. So that, you know, that small action in the mind rebounding in a strong way, partly what happens as we get more attuned to our experience in the moment, we get more, the delusion is much less, so there's less veils over our experience, and consequently we feel the impact of our actions much more clearly. So with delusion present, we may not consciously feel the impact of our actions, and yet they will still rebound on us. And in fact, with delusion, we are more likely to engage in that action again and again and have it, you know, reverberate on us again and again. And so there is in a way it sounds like a contradiction that small action rebounded on me for 3 days feeling like I was in hell. And yet I was on retreat, very open, very sensitive, and so really noticing the impact here and now of having made that action. So the more we are clear, the more we see the direct consequences. And this is actually one of the ways that karma works for us, because the more we see that our actions actually have consequences here and now. So for instance, anger arises. When we are in a deluded state, anger directed outwards, I was in my early days of my practice, what got me into this practice was being angry at a person and it being kind of out of control with my anger. And I saw over time that the belief around the anger was that it would somehow like make the other person miserable. And that's what I was focused on. The delusion was so strong that I was really, my attention was turned towards making that person miserable. In some ways, fortunately, I was 7,000 miles away from that person. And so it became pretty clear that the anger wasn't actually doing much to that person. And what I began to see is how much it suffered here and now to feel that anger. And so the mindfulness began to reveal the consequences of that anger here and now. So the mindfulness practice begins to open us to those choices in our mind, the choices acting out of greed, aversion, and delusion, get much more immediate feedback for us. And we feel much more quickly, oh, that's not acting in a way that will lead towards well-being. So the more immediate feedback can be felt. It feels in a way like it's felt strongly, and it is felt strongly. And yet, I have no idea, you know, what the consequences of that action would be if I had been shrouded in delusion. You know, the consequences of that small life, I had been shrouded in delusion, how it would have rebounded on me in the future. So, as the Buddha said to Angulimala, it's being experienced here and now, the consequences being experienced here and now. And that actually helps us to learn to choose more skillfully, because we see in our own experience here and now, ooh, those mind states, anger, the mind state of wanting, there's contraction, there's tightness, there's burning, it's not a pleasant place to be. So does that speak to you?
I think so. So a less mindful person might experience the consequences way down the line,
yes,
instead of now, and maybe not even know what they're from.
That's right. Yes.
Okay, gotcha.
Yes. Yeah, so it does kind of sometimes feels really random when we're not mindful. When we're mindful, the feedback loops become much more clear. So yes, I mean, it may well be that the consequences, and that's why sometimes I think people think things are so random. And the Buddha actually said, I don't remember who was it that said something about boggling. Oh yeah, it was you that said boggling. The Buddha said that, yes, karma is boggling. And in fact, if you try to work out all of the ways karma interacts, all of the conditions that came together to bring you here in this moment, he said, you'll go mad. So, you know, don't try to figure it all out. But look at this moment. How are you choosing to step into the next moment? That's really where the karma unfolds. So who has the mic? Okay. Mm-hmm. We have about 3 minutes left.
Okay. One more question about the retreat experience.
Is that on? I don't think that's on.
One more question about the retreat experience. How would you determine how much of that feeling of being in hell was guilt or just natural remorse? Or because for me, I have a history of just guilt that I can't get rid of, and to make that distinction between the remorse, which is just that the intention not to do that action again.
Well, I think that's a good question, because you know we do rebound on ourselves. With guilt, with aversion to the action, as opposed to a very, you know, kind of simple, oh, this is the consequences of having done that. So in my experience of that, there was quite a bit of guilt. You know, there was a lot of rebound, which is probably why it lasted for 3 days. You know, it's like I had told a... you know, an exaggeration, or not, it wasn't an exaggeration, what was it? It was a small way of describing the meditation experience to my teacher that wasn't quite accurate, motivated by greed. So I had seen that intention towards speaking hadn't been clear, hadn't been pure. And to my teacher, you know, this was a recipe for guilt. So I did spend, you know, the teacher was away for 3 days, so I couldn't apologize. I couldn't say anything for 3 days. So that's why 3 days. So, you know, as soon as the teacher came back, I left a note, we had a conversation, and it began to diminish. But a lot of it was that guilt. And we know, actually, I think we do know when we are telling ourselves, that was so stupid, why did I do that? You know, we hear it, you know, we know that distinction. And there's a much more balanced mind that goes, yep, this is what it's like when I've done something unskillful. So I think we do know. So, yeah. And it's time to stop. So thank you all for your questions.